Yeah. Take a look around you as you make your rounds. This symbolism embedded in every block in town. You got your Starbucks with the siren straight from Greek mythology. As a woman on the logo, who you win? That's a psychology. The Christ.
Other people have a limit. Weaves those the poems. Every word is hand knitted. Separating the mage from the image. Calculating movements make the visions vivid.
The Warriors.
Well, we are back, everybody, once again for another One Great Work Warrior roundtable discussion. This is going to be a very, actually, interesting conversation, one that I've been looking forward to. But before we do that, I just wanted to take a quick second to let everybody know that's, you know, beginning tomorrow, it is the first of its kind, the Sound Path to Freedom Music Festival. So please, guys, go check it out. I'm going to let you know right where you got to go. The website you want to go to is www.soundpath.org. If you go there, you're going to get all the information. It's a three-day event, so it starts tomorrow, goes right through to September 1st. There's going to be so many incredible artists there doing incredible music. It's all about freedom, and I love the way that they say that freedom does need a soundtrack, and are these artists providing that? So please go to the website, check it out, guys. Once again, www.soundpath.org. That is where you're going to get all the information and find out any things that you need to know. That's where you want to be, guys. So please go there and support. And with that out of the way, let's get into this topic. This is a great one. This was chosen by one of our fellow warriors here, and you know them all. We've got them here with us. We got Chris, we got Derek, we got Brandon, and we got Jim. It's going to be great. We even got Jerry, who's going to be providing some his little bit of information that he wanted to speak about too as well. And of course, the man who brought this topic up, and this is the power of the image. Brandon, this was your topic, so why don't you kick this off and let's dive into this very interesting topic you picked.
Round number two. Since I've already recorded this. This was a topic, the power of the image, been on my mind for beginning of the year. And when Funnel 4 was happening, Conrad Rogers had a song called Talking Image. And when I heard that song, it just resonated with me. So we hear these sayings, we've all heard this religious saying, you know, let us make man in our image. You know, what does that mean? Then we also, have heard these scriptures, you know, thou shalt not worship a graven image. Of course, you know, graven means carved or sculpted, but the whole quote, thou shalt not worship a graven image or any likeness that is in the heavens above or that is in the earth beneath. So, like, what does that mean? You know, what are they talking about, this image? Of course, as always, let's define our terms. An image is an artificial representation of something, a likeness, a figure, a reflection, a statue, a copy, an imitation, a picture. So it is a representation of something in reality. An image can be a symbol. It can be a picture. It can be a photograph. It's usually something that is visual, you know. So we have the word image, and then we have also the word imagery. I'm going to be using those two terms synonymously because the image is representing something that's kind of singular, but imagery is talking about a more of a broader sense, something that's has a deeper connection to, you know, how the senses, you know, a deeper connection with the, you know, how the emotions. So I'm going to be using those two words kind of, you know, interchangeably. So an image can create thoughts and it can create mentation. You know, when we take in these images, it creates mental activity. You know, we remember certain events and certain, you know, experiences by way of images and imagery. You know, when we recall a childhood memory, you know, when we have that image in our mind of that, you know, experience, it connects us back to that place and time, you know. So an image is what connects us to that memory of that experience. Even when we dream, you know, we don't usually remember the words or conversations, if that even happens at all. It is the image that, you know, that we will recall, you know. And we have these sayings, you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. You know, how that was in like the late 90s or early 2000s, you know, when we had the Polaroid, you know, cameras. And then you would have to, you know, take the shit to, you know, have the CVS or Kroger to get the pictures, you know, developed. Because, hell, again, those images create helmentation, and there's so many thoughts that are created within the mind. So many different words, so many different concepts, so many different ideas that will come up with just one image. And a lot of times we may not be able to describe a certain thing. We may not be able to describe a certain experience. We may not be able to, you know, describe in detail how we feel, you know, hell about something. But we can use that image as a symbolic representation, you know, for a deeper understanding of what we are trying to say, what we are feeling, and how we are trying to express ourselves. So that's why the image is a powerful tool, because it is a means of communication and also a means of how we express things, of how we express ourselves, how we communicate and express things to others, and how we communicate and express things in reality. So imagery in and of itself, it helps penetrate the right hemisphere of the brain, you know, where creativity lies, where art, imagination, and our expressions lie dormant. And I say lie dormant because we all have that potentiality. It just has to be tapped into. It has to be awakened. And imagery is one of those powerful tools that can help us, you know, if we are kind of lax in our creative, artistic, musical side, you know, how just like, you know, symbolism can, well, that would fall under, you know, like imagery, being able to tap into that creative mindset, because images are a part of our lives. You know, we've had images for a very long time. You know, when we had the myths and the storytellers, you would have the orators who were the wordsmiths, who would use the words to convey images in the youth's mind, and, you know, like into the listener's minds. Then as time progresses, you know, we started to carve things, you know, we started to carve things on stone. We started to carve things on wood to depict these images. Then we would start to sculpt images. You know, we would mold things with clay, and now we project images. So images have been here since the dawn of mankind. And another tool that images helps us do, it helps us recognize patterns and make sense of reality. So images can help shape and sculpt our worldviews and how we visualize ourselves and see those, you know, around us. Images are a means of us to connect, you know, just like most of the creative outlets are, just like music is a means of us to connect, just like art is the means for us to connect. Imagery is another means for us to connect. And connecting with others, connecting to past experiences, connecting to reality itself. And images also help us see the bigger picture, being able to step back and see things from a different perspective, getting us to put ourselves in other people's shoes, you know. So images help us shape our perception and how we view a lot of things, allowing us to have a more integral experience. And I'm gonna pass it on to Derek.
Oof. Yeah. So thinking about a lot of things in regards to images and imagery and, you know, picture, motion picture, right? And where am I broadcasting from? La Ciota. And if you're familiar with the Lumiere brothers, you might have learned that, you know, this is the place where they filmed apparently the first ever, quote unquote, you know, motion picture, you know, live film type of thing, titled The Train That Arrives in La Ciota. Le train qui arrive à La Ciota, mais oui, les amis, in the place to be. And yeah, it's just interesting feeling some inspiration from that history, being out here for, geez, like 8 years now. It's cool. And yeah, this place is so picturesque and like, you paint a perfect picture like Bob Ross or someone, like, how can you emulate nature to such a perfect degree? And yeah, Brandon, I hear what you're saying with the definition of these things and how it's like we're making a copy of what's already there in a sense, yet how much of that is, you know, what is it, the simulacra or the simulation of something that of the original, right? And we see, though, that being manipulated beyond belief against us, right, in regards to twisting our perspectives and worldviews, right? Because that's so important, right? One's perspective in their worldview. Are you able to have an objective perspective to see the objective reality of this world, to understand the objective truth of these things, and to be able to navigate in this life with objective morality, like moral principles that are just, it is what it is, and this is how we operate. It's, you know, the input output cause and effect aspects of, you know, nature, the cosmos. So when we see all the abundance of, you know, what our eyes can behold, right, it's so beautiful. And you know, I'm thinking about, you know, perspectives in so many different ways, and like the angles of how you see things, right? I picked a image where there's like a waterfall, but then there's like, you know, the water's, you know, flowing over the rocks, and if you put your head down to the ground, like from an ant's perspective, you see there's all types of waterfalls, like any kind of rock. When water is, you know, flowing over it, that's a waterfall, right? It's not just this one big thing over a mountaintop that, you know what I mean, that we have this general idea of, right? So, and I see that also, and thinking about this, I had a chat with someone years ago of just like, yeah, man, like I sent him, or he commented on the picture of, you know, a view I had from my apartment with the sky and some of the clouds and this and that. It's like, oh yeah, you see those clouds, and yeah. It's like, yeah, I can see that. But imagine if you're like even like 50 meters to the left of where I'm placed at, you're not going to see the same type of cloud formations. They're going to be a little bit different. Take it, you know, 100 meters, a mile, a kilometer away, it's going to be different as far as, you know, your perspective of these things. 306 degrees, right? So yeah, it's just a lot of stuff to consider. And was there 360 degrees up in Plato's cave, by the way? And by the way, have you heard about Plato's rave? just Chris in the house. I just want to throw in some wordplay before you run. So yeah, the perspective, like seeing the forest through the trees and all this stuff, being able to see the whole picture, like how many pieces to the puzzle do you carry, right? And are they the proper, you know, untainted, undistorted pieces to the puzzle, right? No one really seems to have all the pieces, and we just have to deal with it. It seems like it's like this paradox, right? We want to align to objective truth and all these things as much as possible, yet there's so many anomalies out there sometimes, and like all the psyops and overlays and all this other shit, right? So speaking of overlays, you know, yeah, the simulacra simulation. That's an interesting book by Jean-Pierre, I forget his last name, Baudrillard, I think, that inspired some of the writing of The Matrix, at least from the Wachowskis' point. But anyways, so yeah, just to finish this off, you know, like we have an image, you know, it could be something that we create, yes, and we get to see it. It's something to behold, bestow, right? We got our talismans, our logos, our emblems, badges. It could be coat of arms, family sigils, tattoos. It's embedded in architecture, you know? And what do we have in modern times, the modernity of these things? It's like a degradation of the beauty of the image of the reflection of, you know, finish with this, as far as human beings, and yeah, it's, you know, slathered on in religious sentiments, but you know, God created man in his image and this and that. And we have so many statues for since antiquity that depict that, and they were arts and crafts of beauty. And it was just not to be sexual or this and that, even if there was nudity and that kind of stuff. It was just, this is the apex of creation. Man, the quintessential being, right? Are we holding them high as we did in the past? I don't think so as much as today. Things are watered down and modernized and unfortunately just, yeah, like oversaturated and all this mess, and we have the digitality of things. But anyways, Jim, how you doing over there on the East Coast, man?
All right. Thanks, Derek. When I was thinking about images, how images don't show the whole picture. And like now when we have these social media apps, and even I'm like, doing it, like you're able to crop out the stuff that you don't want people to see and frame the picture so it looks, you know, the best, and edit it and do all these filters, and it's kind of distorting the truth of, or trying to make it look better. I remember when I went to the pyramids and in Egypt, right, the Great Pyramids, and like I was surprised, like how, like usually when you see pictures of the pyramids, you just see the pyramids, but you don't see like the city and all like the pollution behind it. So I was taking a lot of pictures of that, and that was like 20 years ago, just because I was like wanting people to see, oh yeah, it's not just like in the middle of the desert or whatever. I don't know, like a lot of people know that. So, and then, right, like people will post their pictures, their images on Facebook of them like on vacation, or like only the good thing, the good stuff, like everyone's smiling, the family, but meanwhile, like 5 minutes later, everyone's fighting, you know. But so they're portraying that image, not the picture, it isn't really telling the true story. So people do use images in that way. Also, I have been thinking about when I used to travel, there was one image that no matter where I went, and I went to some like really remote areas, there was one image that was always there. Can you guys guess what it is? All right.
Jesus.
Guess the sun.
Coca-Cola is everywhere. No matter where you go in the world, you're gonna, that's one image that you're gonna see, right? And then I was just heading upstate last week, a few hours drive, and as you're driving up the road, you always see McDonald's. Look, like these logos are always a big part of like images, like imagery we see in our life, and reminders of, like, we all have kind of memories of these companies and corporations. But so as you're driving through the forest, you know, you keep seeing these patterns of culture at the rest stop, the food exits, right, from McDonald's and all the other restaurants. And those are like symbols for food. And those are like the patterns we see for food now. But I think about like how in the past, before, you know, we're so inundated with all this imagery and all these signs, like way so much more. We just like even take it for granted, or we don't even realize how much all it's like so much, even more and more and more, especially with the phones now and social media and all that. There's so much of it. But back before, even television and a couple hundred years ago, people weren't so inundated, and they recognized patterns in nature for food. So they knew like which mushrooms were okay to eat, or which plants out in the forest were good or were poisonous or not. So they were able to keep those images in their mind and remember them. And they had to know those patterns to, survive. And it was good for their health and all that. And I was like looking into that a bit. Now there's like a new term called plant blindness, where people can't even like recognize like food or medicine out in the, especially like indigenous cultures that used to always know it. Like now, like the younger generations now, they don't have that anymore. And they're driving down the road, and their patterns of they're seeing as far as imagery for food is McDonald's and all the logos for like those fast food places. That's like those patterns of culture have replaced patterns that you could see in nature. I just something I thought that I'd speak about, like logos and that, how much we're affected by logos, and then we're always, we're making thumbnails, and we're trying to use these imagery to get our point across as well. So yeah, it's an interesting topic. I was curious to see what Brandon was going to say, and it's like I said, it's something that it's just like such a part of everyday life that it's like I don't even like think about it. Yeah, one last thing is where I live on Long Island, and I think it's because I'm on Long Island, because I don't think every state has this, but I can play a game where I can drive down the road and for a minute without seeing the American flag. I've never been able to do it. I can't drive down the road without seeing an American flag somewhere like within a minute. And I think it's because of 9/11, because and like a lot of people are affected from that around here. But ever since 9/11, there's every gas station has like 20 American flags. It's like there's American flags everywhere. So, I don't know. It's just imagery that's just as you're driving down the road, it's like just things that I'm seeing all the time. Well, I'll pass it to Rick.
To me, then, wow, you guys bring up this was a great topic, Brandon. It really was. And I think we probably all think about this a lot. I know I do. I always think about imagery and the power of it. I don't know if that's because of the artist in me or something. I don't know. I just find imagery really interesting, especially. I think that imagery is so powerful. When you really think about it, you guys have all made great examples so far of what I'm thinking of, the power of imagery. And I would say probably in this realm, imagery would be one of the, if not most powerful, when you think about it. And Brandon said it at the beginning, like these, I think of my life as images. When I think back, it's like at least for me, I think of it in like image, like slides. These moments in time and that, so there's something with imagery that's fascinating to me. And yeah, I think it's most powerful. And geez, I just and how I know it's most powerful in this realm is because they wouldn't be spending the billions and billions of dollars every year on manipulating and putting images out for so many different things. And when I think about imagery, Jim brought it up perfectly with these symbols and stuff like that. I have to say, Jim, that you're bringing up the flag. And I think every country is kind of like that. The Americans are really big with the flag. But I have to say, here in Canada, I was just been noticing over the last probably 6-7 months, kind of like when you brought it to my attention in one of our discussions, we were talking about, like, you know, the flag image. And I said, you know, in Canada, I don't see a ton of people with flags in their properties and stuff, but that's changing. That really is. Like now, even in my own neighborhood, I'm seeing Canadian flags everywhere. It's really something that's growing here. At least in my area of Canada, it wasn't a big thing, but it's definitely happening. And that's a powerful image, your flag, the flag of your country. Think about that alone. And I just think that, yeah, the power, they wouldn't spend the money that they do on imagery and getting it out there and with all these different logos. And you can just, like, all of us can name logos that if you just see it, you know, they've done such a great job of getting that image out there. And got, you know, like, you got McDonald's, you got, name it, McDonald's, you got what, Starbucks, you got Coca-Cola, as Jim said, all of these brands, these images, you know, they're so ingrained into it. And geez, it's just, and I'm also not just imagery, but when I think of imagery, I think of also like sigils, and that was brought up as well, in symbols and the symbology and stuff like that. And what I'm really fascinated about, always have been, is the occulted imagery that's out there. Like to me, the social engineers, to me, it's like their language. They really do speak in symbols and imagery, because it tells so much, I think. These images, and if you know how to read it, you can kind of you learn about it. You can start to see this hidden language that I think they communicate with. And I think this is such a big topic. They can come at it from so many different angles. And I'm trying to stay kind of focused on it, but when I think of like some of the images that are really powerful, like what comes to mind, like that can be that are this manipulation. I think of like a pentagram. You know what I mean? You have the pentagram, but then you also have how it is they can invert it and it means something totally different. I think of the cross is another one, how this inversion where you have the cross and then inverted. And then I've even had a discussion with somebody earlier about the Starbucks logo. Apparently, if you flip that, you get some kind of weird imagery out of it and stuff. So I think that goes on. That happens with a lot of the logos out there. They have this hidden meaning if you understand the language in this symbology and in this imagery. And, geez. I'll save that for the second go around. I was going to kind of touch on something, but yeah, I think I'll leave it with
supposedly that Starbucks, it's like the Aquarian fish people. And if you look at it, she looks like a mermaid spreading her legs. If you ever want to try looking at that Starbucks symbol in a different way, I would check out Freeman Fly's work on that.
Yeah, like, isn't that crazy? Like all these, and the more you look into it, as you just said, Chris, like you start inverting things, and I would encourage people to look up a lot of these images and then kind of the meanings. And it's such a big thing when you kind of, once again, you look at it for the first time, it's overwhelming. When you start to see all the imagery and how they're manipulating it, and it's only getting worse there. And that's how I keep saying, you know, it's powerful because they're manipulating it so bad to the point where I worry, when are we ever going to, maybe we're never going to truly see something authentic again. That's what I worry about. Like they manipulate it. So they've been manipulating it so much that it's going to be hard to find anything that's authentic, that's genuine, that's pure. And that disturbs me. And I think of that with the health industry and all of these things where this is all these images that are manipulated and how they steer people in wherever they want by this imagery, this false imagery that they put out there that's so damaging and powerful. If used in the wrong way, which it seems to be at this current state in history, it is in a lot of ways. So, but I'll leave it at that, Chris, and then I'll come back and wrap up. I wanted to say about that. I'm going to go over to you because, yeah.
Thanks, Rick.
No problem.
Thank you. Picture this, right? Picture yourself on a beach with your feet up, a drink in your hand, right? You conjure up this image, right? Conjure. Let's talk about the word a little bit. What came into my head, I like the green language. My mind always goes there first, like Derek, you know? the mind is climbing, looking for more rhyming, that kind of thing, on the right timing. But I'm like, I mage. What's a mage? You know, so I looked up mage. You know, that's like these sort of ancient times mystical people that were magicians of sorts, right? Magician, mage, magician is where that word. They both come from a similar root. And then I looked up the word image, the etymology, and there's some interesting, if you look through, I like Etym Online because they'll give you a series of ways of looking at it. Latin, imaginem, is described as copy, imitation, likeness, statue, or picture. Also, phantom, ghost, apparition, which kind of gives that different flavor, like the mage, right? A projection. Idea, appearance, is figuratively. But imitari, the stem, means to copy or imitate, as, you know, has been discussed. So I thought to myself of almost like the way our shadow is left on the ground when the sun, you know, you could say, is the shadow real? Yeah, it's just as real as you are, but it's definitely not the same thing as you are. And what's interesting about images is, like Brandon was describing, there's these still shots. Do our memories or even seem like they're these shots? And when we have, often when I search through my memories, I almost find these like moments. And it's kind of like a still shot, but it's somewhat abstract and hard to get a hold of. And the thing about that is that reality is not standing still. And it never is. It's always changing. It's dynamic. And that's one of the most amazing mystical things about this reality that we're in, is that it is never still. So an image, in a way, when you think about it, is always, it's an impression, but it's not the thing. You know, it's like your foot goes into the ground and it leaves this impression. It's not your foot. It's the impression of your foot. And the problem with modern viewpoint and belief systems, be it government, schools, educational systems, all these things I describe as the walls of the Tesseract, are inventions of ways of thinking about things, ways of imagining things. And I always think of imagination, right? It sounds like I mage nation, or I made a nation. I mage a nation. I make a nation. You know, there's all these different ways to think about it, but in a way, we're all collectively projecting what we think should be, and we're getting this result, right? And as been described very eloquently by Mark Passio on whatonearthishappening.com, the way manifestation really happens in this realm that we're in is things start in the realm of non-physical realm, thoughts and ideas, and then when they begin, when an idea becomes a thought process and then a plan, it can be manifest into the real world. And so it always happens in that order. And that's where we kind of look to Plato's cave and we think about the projection, projecting the shadows on the wall. But this whole reality out there that's other than that, a whole nother thing, a whole nother world that's way more 3D and way more bright. And so that is the actual truth of the reality, that we are in a matrix type situation. Because the mass of our world around us is really way over-focused on the material world. That's part of the mental condition that's causing the problem, is that we're not seeing that reality is more so about morality. It is more so about love and care than it is about physical things and images, right? Those are just little tools we use in the process of learning care in this realm, in these bodies, right? And of learning to experience. And so, you know, it just brought to mind too, like, remember in Crocodile Dundee, and he talks with the Aborigines, and he's like, I'm on a dream. You know, he's going on a dream trip, right? They call it dreaming, right? And if you look that up, that is not just Aboriginals. People live close to the land, have many different practices that are forms of bringing about this dream-like state of mind through drumming, through shaman practices, to sort of get in touch with nature and reality and dream even stories from past generations and retell stories. I think this is a more positive way to use our imagination. We work together and share the stories of our past generations. And when, you know, the guy got killed by the lion because the moon was going down, and that passes on a lesson to the next generation, and they're thinking about it, and it's stories about grandfather, and you know what I mean? We're all tied in. We're all integrated like the tree of life. But our modern world, everything's all cut up in these belief systems, and you can just watch images all day, left and right, every side of your cube, and none of them are the real thing. None of them are the dynamic, real, moving energy that is life, that is reality. They're just pictures, and they're still. And so that was the main point I wanted to make, that the difference between the natural type of imagining and dreaming and the type we're actually experiencing, which is more of a hypnotism trick of mind control, of getting stuck in belief systems. So I think we're going to send it to Jerry. And then when Jerry's done, we'll go back to Brandon.
Hello, guys. I am ready to give my talk on the power of the image. So, images. We first started using images when we were cavemen, and we drew images on the wall, and that's how we communicated with each other, because we couldn't talk yet. And we also used symbols to communicate messages and truth, and pass it down through through generations. That way the information never got lost. Or some say that we drew images because pass down knowledge throughout generations. So, because information is that important. So with images, they are used in marketing, and they can be photoshopped. And images are powerful, and I'm going to give an example or two examples of how powerful they are. Emmett Till. When the images of Emmett Till was released, that ignited the civil rights movement, a revolution. And also, when the images of, what's his name? The person basically that started the Black Lives Matter movement, that all came about because of images. So they're very powerful. George Floyd was his name. Okay. And images can be used for good or bad. And in the bad sense is that it can be used to indoctrinate, to use for brainwash. I would just say for people to be a part of the herd. For example, during COVID, or they can use it for blackmail. You have politicians getting caught doing things that would ruin their career, essentially. So, very powerful stuff. And right now, I'm talking mostly about the external image. I want to talk about perception. So, I saw this video of someone who was pretending to be Barack Obama. It was a TED Talk, and people treated him differently because people saw him as the president. But as soon as he stopped pretending to be Barack Obama, as soon as he stopped dressing as him and he was being himself, people stopped treating him like a president, with, I guess, putting him on a pedestal. And instead, they didn't really pay him any mind. And that is unfortunate. That just goes to show how powerful the image is. And so be wary of how people present themselves. And I guess the what I wanted to say when I mentioned that is, it's crazy because, just don't judge a book by its cover, right? It doesn't matter what color your skin is. What matters is the content, okay? So I'm sure there's something else important here I wanted to say, but I'm just going to keep moving on. Yeah, I would say dress how you really feel inside. Dress authentic. Don't be copying people or dress. I mean, just put some care into how you dress. That's going to go a long way. It's going to give you confidence and just lift you up. And I'm going to talk about the internal image now. How we look at ourselves internally. So, me, for example, there was a period of time where I thought badly or wrongly about myself, and that didn't get me anywhere. So, I'd recommend kind of speaking to yourself kindly and start picturing yourself as someone who's strong and successful, right? And I would just also mention something very powerful is the imagination. How as kids we have a lot of imagination, but later on in adult life we kind of lose it, perhaps through indoctrination, but it's important to have the imagination because we can't change the conditions that are here without the imagination first. And I read The Power of Imagination, or actually listened to it, by Neville Goddard. And I almost fell into the trap of the law of attraction, right? That's portrayed by The Secret. And I had to get back on track to understand the real law of attraction, which is as you think, so you feel, and so you act. So it's very important to act. And there's a good quote I heard while I was doing research by this photographer. I think his name was Devin Allen. I mean, I'm not too sure, but he said if he's talking about photography, he said, capture, and I'm just kind of, this isn't word for word. He said, if it's going to change history, capture it. He's talking about the image. So that goes both ways, externally and internally. And what else do I want to say? I'm sure there's something. Yeah, I think that's all I wanted to say. So, yeah, if you have any more questions, you know, you can reach out to me and just be mindful of what you're consuming, right? So let's stop consuming as much. Start creating. Peace.
Thank you, Jerry. So as Rick was talking, the idea came into my mind. It's not even an idea, but it seems that your images have a deep connection with our unconscious. Obviously, because that's why they are so powerful. That's why we remember our experiences, our dreams by way of images. And of course, our thoughts, that long-term memory is stored in our subconscious / unconscious. So earlier I was talking about the orator and having those skills, being that wordsmith and having that verbal judo. Well, like I was saying, in ancient times, having a honey mouth was considered a gift. It was a wonderful gift. It was an art because it allowed you to take speech and use myths and storytellings and be able to elaborate and embellish to sell these stories, to plant these stories in the listeners' minds. I always called it the great grandfather energy. You know, Chris has it. You know how Manly P. Hall, you know how had it. Being able to talk about these stories and these allegories so that the listener can see these stories, can see the characters, can see the scenes, can see and visualize these scenarios to where they actually feel as though they're engaged in the story. They're actually engaged in the myth. Just as though, you know, you had the scribbler, you know, the poet who could write these words down on paper in such a fantastic way that the reader is envisioning these poems, envisioning these scenarios. You know, all the great poets of old had these skills, all the great writers, all the great orators. And one of the greatest inventions of all times, and I would say possibly behind the internet, and I would say this is possibly going, would go down as the, one of the top three inventions of all times, which most people don't even talk about it that much, is the magic lantern. Laterna Magica, the image projector. And the reason why this was such a transmutative creation is because you could take an image and project it onto a wall. You could take an image and project it onto a screen by using, you know, how lenses are one lens and a form of how light source. You had a transparent picture, you had a transparent image, you had a transparent painting. We all know what the magic projector is because if you go into any form of schooling in the past 200 years, they all use projectors. We all remember those old school, you know, projectors, and you have the translucent image. You have to put it upside down and it would display a image. Where do you think we've got a lot of our cameras and movie, you know, movie equipment from? The Laterna Magica was created in the 17th century. The original creator is still unknown, but it is speculated that it was created by the Dutch inventor Christian Huygens. My Dutch is extremely terrible. But there was another inventor by the name of Athanasius Kircher who have said to have helped improve the design. Some people may have said that he created it because him and Huygens, you gotta put that Dutch in there. I'm butchering it. But hell, they were good friends. So some people say that Kircher, who was a Jesuit, possibly will go down as one of the top five Jesuits to ever have existed. But, you know, they talked about this device in a lot of their occult teachings, because this obviously came out of the occult schools. That's why it was called the Laterna Magica. And what this did at the time was, you know, in the 17th century, you know, when people were very superstitious, you could project the image onto an actual screen. This was life-changing because they understood the power that came along with that. And there was a very allegorical story from the Arabian Nights called Aladdin and the Magical Lamp. And I've always found that story to be symbolic of what the dark occultists were trying to do. And if you're familiar with Aladdin and the magical lamp, I'm not going to go into full detail about what the story, but the quick rundown is you had this evil tyrant and he heard that there was a magical lamp. This lamp could grant wishes by way of projecting a genie who would grant you whatever you desired. So he got a peasant by the name of Aladdin to go and find this magical lamp. So when you look at the words lamp and lantern, they are damn near synonymous terms because they both have to do with light. Light was symbolic of knowledge. Knowledge is food for the mind. So hell, again, we're talking about mentation. We're talking about the mind. Well, if the lamp was able to grant wishes, what has always been the biggest wish for the dark occultists? to eliminate free will. So being able to project the image onto a screen, onto a wall, also means with enough time, you can project images into one's consciousness, project the image into one's mind. So when you look at the term wish, a wish is something that is usually unobtainable, but you still yearn for it. Well, a desire is something that you deeply want. So a wish and a desire are not the same thing, but they are darn near relatable terms. And when you desire something, it's usually going to be on your mind a lot. You know, it's going to be running through, you know, your mind. It's going to be on your mind a lot. So you're going to crave it. So when you have in the story able to grant wishes, hell, again, if you can project the image onto a screen into one's consciousness, can't you also grant them wishes? You can fulfill their deepest desire, you know? So we see the image being projected of the ideal man and the ideal woman, something that most people desire, something that most people wish for, something that most people yearn for, something that most people crave. You know, you go on these magazines and you see, you know, like how the male, you know, with a six pack, or you see, you know, how the woman with all the Botox and all the surgery, you know, like the fake boobs, the BBL, creating this false image in people's minds. And then subconsciously they're like, oh, I desire that, because with the image comes along other things. Then they attach themselves to that image. They connect themselves to the image because they yearn for it at a subconscious level, but it's not obtainable. It's not obtainable. So then therefore you try to harmonize with the image, but you can't, because that is a proxy. That is a fake thing trying to fulfill an inner, deeper, darker desire. So what does that do for the individual? Well, it usually leads to, you know, negative consequences, you know, a lack of self-worth, a lack of self-esteem, a lack of self-love, more self-hate, because they're trying to be something that they are not. You know, a lack of self-confidence, a lack of self-respect, a lack of self-worth, a lack of self-care. And these images are projected largely toward children, largely toward hell, young little girls who are still, you know, developing, who are still growing, who are still trying to understand things into reality. But again, that magic lamp can grant you that wish, can grant you that desire. But there's always a catch. There's always a catch. Then that young mindset sees this image and they're like, oh, I want to be like that. Oh, that is me. That could be me, because I'll get all the likes. I'll get all the validation. You know, all the guys will talk to me. All the girls will talk to me. You know, I'll get all the views. Then you go and try and imitate and be that, and you fail. That's why I say Laterna Magica has been one of the greatest inventions ever known to man. Because these images that we are seeing are being directly projected into our consciousness now at the level to where we have people who are surrounding themselves by these images, to where they have created a matrix-like scenario where they can't even tell the difference between what's true and what's false, because the images are all around us at such a degree that's even worse than it was 20 years ago. Think about it. During September 11th, like Jim talked about, we kept getting flashed with certain images. Bam, 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 had repetition. Traumatic-like images. That was back then. Now we have images at the access of our fingertips. Hell, I bet you can go a day and you see over 1,000 images. Hell, the average person, because they're everywhere. So what images are we taking into our consciousness? Are we taking positive images that can uplift, that can change and influence, you know, our behavior, that can influence and inspire our consciousness toward freedom, toward morality, toward the goals that we say we want? Or are we taking in negative, violent, hypersexualized, toxic form of imagery? You know, the whole TikTok shorts, you know, images that don't lead to what we say we want. Again, all of this stuff matters because we have to pay attention to what we take into our consciousness, because all the information that we take into our mind is food for the mind. Just as though we can eat healthy food and take in healthy forms of images and healthy symbols, we can also take in negative, detrimental forms of, you know, symbols, of pictures, of, you know, images. So it all begins with a choice, because if we don't use these images correctly, then we will misuse, then next we will kill abuse. Because there's no such thing as, I mean, like, the image in and of itself isn't good or bad. Like, imagery isn't good or bad. It's what we choose to do with those images, you know, because we can still learn from some of those dramatic, you know, negative images to a degree, but we shouldn't have them flash, you know, like, you know, in our minds 24/7. That's why when you watch all of those Hollywood videos, when they're talking about mind control, what's one way that they take a normal individual and they turn them into that mind control slave? They flash them with all of these violent forms of imagery 24/7. Bam, 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 in a repetitive like mindset. Because again, there is a deep connection with imagery and our unconscious.
You had me thinking about Clockwork Orange, you know, with the guys, like, you know, but he was shown other images, you know, to correct his violent ways, but, you know, insidiously and all that, nefariously enough, you know, the media is doing that with feeding us, you know, all types of bullshit slop. And we have the AI generated slop machine going on. You know, it's not like a dime a dozen images per minute or second. It's like a dime a thousand now. But, you know, folks that are have a proper consciousness, like Chris, you know, is using those tools for the, you know, proper usage. Wow. Wow, Brandon. That was a really cool thread you brought up in regards to, yeah, the lantern, the genie, the projections and this and that. And it's just the whole part of the mind control. And it's like that next step, you know, like showing the distorted images or things that, you know, the controllers want us to see to kind of craft and carve out our behaviors to their desired effect and that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's sad that I mentioned this in another Warriors video of, you know, children grow up, you know, they can name, you know, a bunch of, you know, corporate logos, but they can't name 10 different trees. Innate, you know what I mean? So there's a disconnect from nature there, right? So yeah, imagine, right? Yeah, Chris, I'm really glad you did that play on words with the I Magi Nation, right? And yes, we cannot separate the mage from the image, you know, and this is not a scrimmage, this is real life, y'all. So we're here to awaken those dormant senses. And what have I done on my channel, Awaken Your Mind, with the audiovisual aspects of my work is to that desired effect. Because I do recognize a lot of power in the images. And that's kind of what, I'll admit this straight up, guys, that, like, yeah, the images have taken hold of me a little too much. And I'm overly captivated by them to the point where I choose watching videos over reading books. And this is a bad habit I've had over the years, because I remember growing up reading books and just letting the imagination soar, and like you're having images in your head when you're reading words, right? That's magic, right? So yeah, things to appreciate on the positive, take heed on the flip, because we all know that the controllers love to pervert and invert all that is good, and just, you know, that is there as far as, you know, conscious human expression, right? So, yeah. Look at all the colors, man. Holy shit, you know, like... Have they not spent billions into, you know, the R&D, research and development of pinpointing, you know, the airbrushing of magazine images, photos, and, you know, color coordinations and all this stuff. But this is old news. You know, like, we can take it to the tarot. You know, they had specific, you know, especially the Rider-Waite tarot deck, they had specific colors, you know, because they understood on an occult level what colors represent and kind of what they allude to. They give off a specific type of frequency, vibration, right? And we can interpret that collectively, right? So, yeah, it's just, is that not powerful? Have you guys not looked at any kind of tarot card and be like, wow, yeah. That one image is telling a lot, you know? And what's the most watered down phrase that we've heard? A picture is worth 1,000 words, right? What words are being accurate to the actual image sometimes, you know? So, yeah. But yeah, I like Brandon, he said in the first round of how, yeah, images, they can stimulate senses. They can awaken them as well, right? So that's the power I see in what I try to, you know, incorporate in my works, and understand that on the flip side, of course, they're, you know, using the power of the image to, you know, keep us asleep and all that stuff. Turn us off and kind of water down some of our imagination and make us, you know, like, we'll think for you, you know, like that kind of stuff. We'll show you all that, you know, like all that hypnosis crap. And yeah, because first impressions stick like glue sometimes. And that's what part of that R&D that they spend so much money on, of like trying to get the perfect image and like the perfect thumbnail, the perfect fucking like 5 seconds of any kind of video you're going to click on fucking YouTube and all this stuff. Like, whoa, settle down. What happened to the what we've been talking about for the past 2 years of the craft of the art? You know, things can be a lot more subtle and just in the moment, happening naturally, organically. You know, it's not just, it's like overly manufactured motherfucking bullshit on the assembly line of content creative fucking YouTubery bullshit. Fuck that. So not to rant on for that, but but think of, let's take it back to ancient times, because, yeah, Brandon, I'm feeling you. And imagine Michelangelo. Imagine being his apprentice. Imagine just, you know, spending weeks or months, you know, next to him, watching him do his meticulous art and painting. These things took a long, long, long time. And in the digital age, you know, we can easily take these things for granted, right? So what is our foundation based off of? Who are the shoulders of giants that we're standing on? And are people taking a dump on them, by the way, sometimes? Because folks need to check themselves and, you know, get more than just some fucking toilet paper, whatever. Anyways, so just going to finish off of, yeah, I wish I could be a proper artist. I can't really draw much myself. I have a lot of respect for those that can do those things, including my sister, you know. But yeah, thinking about old school animations and that kind of stuff. Do those older Disney movies, seem more authentic than, you know, the more newer modern versions. You know, like, oh, we have so much technology now, yet it's lacking some of that human element, it seems. And that's kind of the missing ingredient in modernity, it seems, sometimes. So stay human out there, y'all. And yes, be the mage in the image that you're trying to see in your life. You know, write your book of life. You know, all that stuff. It all ties in, all that stuff. So yeah, pass it off. Jim, what's good, yo?
Yeah, you were saying how Michelangelo, like how long it took for him to create those images. But I don't think anyone's mentioned yet that when it comes to images, we process them in like a tenth of a second. It's like so fast. And so many times people just see the image and they don't read the story that is alongside of it, right? And they're just getting that image. And most of the time when it comes to like the news, if you see like a newspaper, it's projecting fear, right? And that's a big tactic we all know about, we talk about. And yeah, it really gets me with, I don't know, like why I was lucky to realize or get the awareness of what like the mainstream media was doing. Like you start to see it for real, like all the fear and the images and the stories they're telling. And like, I don't know, like if my mom, I could tell her that this is what they're doing. And she has no awareness of what's really going on with these images. And then the commercials come on for the pharmaceutical, and then they're showing like happy sick people. It's like, you know what I mean? And playing like the all that music behind it too, which is another story. We've spoken about music as well. But yeah, like to really have the awareness of what these images are capable of doing is, I think that's a big part of why we're making this video, right? It's to create that awareness. Get so much of it is instantly fear. Like even if you don't want to see it, you're gonna see it. Like if you go into the convenience store or whatever, the gas station, and then the newspaper that's like right there, as soon as you walk in, you see this shit, man. Like especially like the headlines in like the New York Post, it's like crazy. But yeah, it also made me think of that movie They Live, right? Which was like in the 80s or the early 90s that came out. Like something like that was like so crazy, so like out there and bizarre. But now it's like, yeah, it's like people are waking up to like that, what's behind those images. You know, what are those images really trying to get people to behave and be like Brandon was saying, right? It's getting people to behave and want to be a certain way. And yeah, there's not too much more. I think that the main point of this is just how instantaneous those images can affect people, and people aren't going after like the whole story. It's just bam. And maybe most people think that Michelangelo was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle these days. That's about it. But, Rick, you're up, man.
Well, thank you. And once again, gentlemen, this has been such an interesting topic and conversation. I really am enjoying this because this is, once again, things I really like thinking about and have thought about. And I would, what Jim was just saying, I would say, you know, you're bringing how like quickly images can affect you. And I would even say, you don't even have to see the image. We've learned that with subliminal messaging, where they did experiments in movie theaters, where they would just, they do it so quick, flashing these images, but the subconscious mind picks it up and it does affect, it was affecting the sales. They would flash like popcorn or pop or whatever. And they would, it was the subliminal imagery that they were casting, that the, you know, your eyes aren't picking it up and you're not seeing it, but your subconscious is, and it does affect you. That's so powerful when you just think about that aspect of imagery alone, So I love that Jim brought that up. And once again, Brandon, you bringing up the magic projector. That's so cool. Like when you think about that, and you make a great point that, because I was thinking, like, as you said that, I'm like, what did we have before this magic lantern, like this magic projector? Well, you know, you would have like, I guess, written word. You would have art. So you could express yourself through art and writings, and then maybe even stories, like verbal stories and tales that you would tell, I guess, around the campfire and stuff like that. And even music, I guess. I'm just trying to think of different ways we would bring images that we have in our mind to other people. And then the creation of this magic projector just would change the whole game. Like it, like, and that is so powerful. Oh my God. Like, think of that, taking that, those images and actually putting them on a screen before somebody and getting that out. And which it, like, as Brandon said, it changed everything. Like it changed the shape of everything, which has led to where we are now. And then to internet and stuff like that. So, wow, that's another whole topic right there. But geez, really cool. Really cool, the points that you guys bring up. That's what I love, because you guys come at it, we all come at it from kind of different things, and it comes together beautifully. And Derek, you do amazing imagery and stuff like that. You made me, you are way more creative than you give yourself credit for, my friend. Oh my God. Like the imagery, the thumbnails that you do, that's an art of you doing with mixing music like you do and bringing music to people and stuff like that. This is all very powerful, and this is all imagery as well. So I mean, my hat's off to you. I think you do a beautiful job at what you do. So I just want to say that, because you are an artist, I'd like to say. And I just, geez, I'm trying to think how I want to land this. There's so many ways you could go, but I would probably, and it was Brandon was saying, like with the imagery, what's really interesting that you brought up is that, you know, what can they control with that? And I think Brandon said free will. Like you can actually manipulate people's free will and shape it. Yeah, it's just, yeah, think about that. I just think about that. And when you start diving into this and thinking about it, you really start to see how they do, how kind of like behind the curtain of how they're, what they're doing. Like the Wizard of Oz, you get a glimpse in behind it when you see it. All the things that we've mentioned, and then looking at the symbology and the inversion of symbology and all this, what we're discussing, you start to see behind the curtain, and it becomes clear of how they are manipulating people with something that is so powerful. Once again, as I said, they spend billions. So much research goes into all of this, into affecting the images that we see in whatever form it would be. And there's so many different ones. And so I would say, when we think about all these images that we are all bathed in and are all susceptible to, and they're around us 24/7, pretty much. That's, you know, and who are the biggest users and using it to its maximum effect, good or bad? We kind of all touched on that at some point in this conversation. Who's using this against us? Hollywood, definitely. You know, like Hollywood industry is filled with imagery, obviously. I would say the music industry, really, I can't think of many things that aren't affected by this, but I'm trying to think of some of the big ones. Definitely, as somebody said, the beauty industry would be one that would really stand out. And then definitely government, and especially religion, all using imagery to manipulate us. And once again, as Brandon said, manipulating our free will and steering us like those. And I would say, how are those images that you are taking in, how are they affecting you, changing you? And are you even aware that they are? Like, are you putting any thought into this, that they're even affecting you and that they do have control over you to some degree? I think awareness is really, are really key to all of it, knowing at least what they are using and the tools they are using against us is really important. And I would say then we get back to, because if you want to become aware, this kind of ties into if you're not aware of it, and then you become aware of it, and you've built your image on this, on the things affecting you around you, you become aware of how this manipulation is affecting you, and your life. If that's your foundation, are you strong enough to tear that foundation down and start rebuilding one, a true foundation, a solid one, one that's built on obviously objective morality and principles and ethics and all these things that we talk about, on natural law, all these things? Are you willing to take down this false image that has been forced upon you through imagery? Once you become aware of how they're doing it and that it is affecting you, are you strong enough to tear that down? That's really a test, I think, and very interesting, because as you guys keep saying, we're all affected by it. And Derek said it too, that's, you know, he used to read more and now he's affected more by watching things and the video format and stuff like that. So we're all, all of us, we're all affected by this imagery. I don't know how you would not be. You'd have to, I don't know how you wouldn't be at this point with the way the world is. You're definitely going to be affected by it. So, did you build it? Are you strong enough to build it? Like, did you build your foundation on this false imagery? What they're telling you is you should be thinking, what you're seeing is what you should be. Cause I think of that too. I think of like how they have this, through this imagery and this manipulation, they're telling you what food you should be eating. They're telling you what movies you should be watching, what music you should be listening to, what's beautiful, what's not beautiful. It's really everywhere. And so, yeah, I would then also say, once again, foundation is key. We have to have a strong foundation when it's not built on these false images. And I would call that, to wrap up what I want to say, I would say that this is part of your inner work, which we call shadow work. This is so important. Once you become aware of this, are you willing to do the hard work, the hard lifting, and tear that foundation down, that false foundation, and build one solid? I'll end with that. So I'll pass it to you, Chris.
Thanks, Rick, because that actually ties in really well with what I've been thinking about, the difference between natural law and human invention. Natural law is pre-existing, inherent, built in, right? We discover principles. We don't invent them, we discover them. Inventors, though, you know, someone like Tesla or some of these amazing people in history, as you were discussing, Da Vinci, had ability to kind of dream and see things other people can't see with their own initiative. And like Tesla described seeing things in dreams, just like I was talking about the Aboriginal dreaming. So when we think about the natural environment, it has its own imagery. The most fantastic imagery of all time, the stars, the sky, the mountains, the world all around us, these give you visceral emotional feelings. Generations of people staring at stars, whole thought processes and different types of dreaming came out of that, right? And so let's bring it down now, though. I mean, that's all about the aggregate, all of us, communal. We're all stuck in these traps. Yes, this is a big problem. What do we do about it? How do we personalize this problem and transmute it and start working towards the solution and be on the positive side of the imagery, getting back to the natural recognition of principles and what is the most amazing imagery out there, right? And I think that thing that, Brandon, you're talking about, it kind of brings to mind this idea I've called the crystal, right? The divine crystal, our interconnection to the great all. And we can almost see it as our lamp too, because we actually do emit light as beings. We emit light. And so we have the ability to change things in this realm. I'm thinking about Minecraft. My kids got real into Minecraft when they were kids. And when you start off in Minecraft, like if you just delete the whole game and start from nothing, like you got nothing, you're just out there with your hands, right? And you got to like chop at a tree until you can get a piece of tree. And then once you get a piece of tree, you can make yourself a little work stump. And then once you get a little work stump going, you can, you know, go get some, you know, you got to build from nothing though, right? And that's the, like, what reality is made of is what I described, the non-material principles, that natural law, the inherent aspects of reality. So we need to go back, strip away all the BS and go back and then ask ourselves, what am I identifying with? Because a lot of this does, you know, we did that talk about the ego. What is the ego? Everybody sees in the modern world the ego as a negative thing more often than not. It's often brought up in a negative connotation, partly because of all these projections of images we've discussed that have said, oh, men act like this, women act like this. Look at these pictures on the screens. They objectify women. They make men look like liars, constant liars and braggers, right, who can't really back up their stuff. And then these doctors advertising cigarettes and the Bernays or the masks, stay home and wear your mask billboards and feel weird if you're different than others. These all objectify people and put them in the classifications. And they make people get sorted into smaller boxes. But we need to reintegrate and ask ourselves, what am I? And what am I creating? And when we start doing that in a very real way, it's way, way more difficult than watching images. We're creating our own image of what we want to be. And that is the big lesson of why we're here in this realm. It's like Minecraft. You get to create the story. Yeah, you're given certain cards and aspects, but you get to create now. You get to co-create in this reality by thinking and then internalizing and then expressing through your rhetoric and through your body. I can actually build a house. I've done it, you know, and see the finished product. So we can put things out in the world to make us feel like we're doing something productive, to make us feel like we're part of the natural flow of reality rather than blocking it and stacking it in corners and looking at it through lenses that are not our own. So my challenge to you is take the initiative, find the positive side of your ego, initiate the change that you want to see in your life and in the world, and don't identify with all those stories they put on those computers and screens and visions and projections. You can see them. They're going to be flashing around in your head, but you don't have to follow the orders of them. You don't have to be that story. You can reconnect with your inner light and project what you think needs to happen in the world to make it better. And that's the kind of thing that we're projecting with what we do here on the One Great Warwick Warriors, what we do on the Freedom Under Natural Law conferences, which Ignite is coming up in February 21st and 22nd. And what's happening this very coming weekend in Philadelphia at the Sound Path for Freedom, which I'm going to be there to see it live in person. And that's an image I want to keep in my head. And I'll be snapping some images while I'm there, trust me. But I've noticed a lot, even with that, taking the pictures from being a dad, taking pictures of my kids. There's an aspect of it that takes you out of the reality of being in the moment when you're looking on your device to check your picture, you know. And so even there, we have to find balance, right? It's neat to save these images, but you're missing the real moment, which is dynamic and moving, and it's not instantaneous, like Jim was saying. I think we need more images of Jim in the world. I'd call them Jimages. No, but Jim puts out a lot of good material, and so does Rick, like on his radio show, talking about good stuff constantly. Brandon, 24-hour live streaming every week, showing up with us, putting out images of the way that we want to see the world. Derek, hundreds and hundreds of videos of soundscapes, images of all types, imagination for us to dig into our emotions and feelings and find that, what I'm talking about, that initiative we need to make the decision to do things that are right, that you're going to look back from another generation and be like, man, good thing that you did that. Okay. So that's my encouragement to listeners.
Awesome.
I think that's about it for tonight. It's been a fantastic conversation. I appreciate hearing all your inspiring words and even the parts that are hard to hear. Thanks for bringing them up, guys. Thanks for being warriors. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Can I just add one thing, Chris, is to leave somebody with an image? Because we're talking about image. I had to pick this up because it's called Liquid Death.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, what is going on with the image? Like, I mean, just think about that. I just want people to think about that. It's got a skull in the front. Of course, that's why I bought it, because I love anything with skulls. Go figure. But Liquid Death. And I'm just, that gets into the power of if words and if it imprints on things, all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, just wanted to bring up that image.
And it's water, isn't it? It's
just yeah, it's just supposed to be water, but yeah. Funny how they call it liquid.
Not exactly
yeah.
the water of life.
Yeah, so I just thought it was really interesting. Life. Yeah.
The water. I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, what the fuck?
Well, they do, you know, death cells, and so do titties, you know. They hide the word sex in the ice. Have you seen that on the yep. advertisement for the alcohol? Yep. And then the skulls turned out to be, people love it. We're fascinated with it because we're living fear-based lives, right? And that's why I'm saying we need to flip that script. Okay. Instead of leaving fear of this next image they're going to show us, live in the inner faith and trust that I know I'm going to be putting out some positive images to counteract that BS, you know? So that's the current you want to flow in rather than getting blown away by their death bullshit, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And well, the liquid death, I think they claim that the reason they call it that is because they're trying to eliminate plastic water bottles and stuff like that. But then you find out, if you do a little research, that they have, that these cans are lined with plastic. So it's like they have their story of why they got the name, but I'm just who knows?
Microplastics, anyone?
Exactly. I just thought it was really interesting to kind of show that at the end because we're just talking about imagery and, yeah, interesting.
Great chat, guys. Much love, and we'll see you all next month for our next One Great Work Warriors episode. Thanks.